Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is a Saturday edition of On Point and Black Political, if you will. I'm your co-host, Ron Edwards, coming to you on a lovely Saturday afternoon here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, though the temperature is still in the 30s. I tell you, this has been a long winter for Minnesotans in the upper Midwest, if you will. It happens. The last 5 or 6 years, we've been spoiled with respect to good weather. This time last year, my friends, the temperatures were in the 60s and 70s, and we haven't seen a day of 40 degrees yet. So, you know, that's the way it is. Hey, March Madness, so we figure there will be not many people listening live. So really we're doing this for effect. We're doing this for on demand, where you can certainly call the program back and catch the more salient points of today's program. Co-host Don Allen is doing his conservative thing. He's at a conservative convention or gathering in the southern part of the county here in Minnesota, in Hennepin County. Mr. Allen, I know he'd want me to do this, if you will, to promote him a little bit, you know, even though he's of a conservative persuasion, but he's trying to become the first African-American or Negro to be the chair of the GOP committee, state party, if you will. Of course, he's a, I don't want to say dark horse, but certainly he's a long shot. Sure, he's a dark horse. It's kind of tough for the Republicans to get their arms, if you will, around a person who looks like Barack Obama heading up the state party, if you will, the state central committee, no matter what the state is supposed to be. But anyways, Don is doing his thing. He hopes to join us sometime later on, maybe at the 3:40, 3:45 mark, if you will. Hope that he can. But the news and the investigative reports must go on, if you will. Let me tell you a story here about our beloved city. By the way, we will open one of our private telephone lines, 763-228-1748, particularly for our outstate listeners. Will be a phone line that will be open, and we will do some patching, if you will, if you have any questions, though we would encourage you to wait probably about 13 to 14 minutes as we go over some of the salient issues. By the way, before we deal with, you know, the Chicago version here in Minnesota, some red flags went up in the Middle East a couple days ago when the Democratic Army of Syria, who are a part of the in rebellion against the current leadership in Syria, indicated that chemical weapons had been used in an attack in the north of Syria and then also allegedly on the outskirts of Damascus. Unfortunately, President Barack Obama, who was visiting, in fact, he was conducting a state visit in Israel and took time to spend a couple hours with Palestinians, which really I don't think served any real purpose. Palestinians kind of realizing they're really getting the short end. And in fact, on my television program here in the Twin Cities on Sundays, I'm going to spend quite a bit of time next Sunday taking a look once again at the history of the two-state solution and the fact that, you know, way back in 1948, Palestinians, along with the Jews, now known as the Israelis, were promised a two-state solution. Israelis got theirs. Palestinians are still waiting. You know, it's been almost 60 years. But the president was there, made some immediate comments about going over the red line and et cetera. Once again, didn't get all of the detail. United Nations and the Atomic Energy Agency for the United Nations indicating that it is now basically clear that there was not chemical weapons used of the military version, if you will, that something may have happened, a propane tank may have been hit, etc., in this terrible fighting that has taken now in excess of 75,000, that's the official number, by the way, of lives in Syria. But clearly, a warning signal went up that this situation in Syria is closer to a significant explosion, excuse the reference, than anyone wants to fess up to. It's been 2 years now. You know, what was it, a year and a half ago, we were hearing the quote-unquote Western experts indicate that President Assad, the strongman of Syria, president in name, would be deposed and new order would come as a part of the Arab Spring, the Arab uprising. Well, we're now 2 years into this carnage, and none of that has happened, if you will. Keep your eye on that part of the world, as we talked about last week's program, that with regards to Syria, Iran, North Korea, there are some delicate situations that will require real diplomacy, real knowledge, real understanding of how to address the problems without causing the quote-unquote red button to be pushed. And red buttons in this particular scenario can be extremely fatal, particularly if it goes to nuclear, chemical, biological, or just spills over the borders with hundreds of thousands of military personnel being involved. Drones and such things as that in a full-scale conflict will not do you much good, if you will. They will create damage, but you will probably wind up losing your asset, quote-unquote, the drones. Another issue that is creating a problem, word out of Washington, by the way, is that President Barack Obama is preparing some kind of speech to the or address to the nation about the drones. So it means that it's beginning to have some problems, or creating some problems, certainly in the opinion polls. Drone attacks, the faceless silent assassins, if you will. Again, though, this is Ron Edwards, co-host for On Point. Co-host Don Allen is at some kind of conservative gathering as he presses ahead with his candidacy to be the first colored guy, if you will, to head up the Republican Party. And that's how some of the Republicans view it. But he could mount a serious challenge. It just all depends on how much of the game that the Republicans want to put forward, that they have changed their spots and complexion after the crushing defeat in the November 2012 election, if you will. Well, corruption continues to move about. Interesting story. And for those of you that are close to your computers, it can be corroborated. Wednesday's edition of the Star Tribune of Minneapolis, if you will, below the fold, by the way, this got front page coverage. The headline is Labor Flexes Its Muscles in Minneapolis Races. And what's happened, we have a unique situation here. This election year, we have all 13 council seats in Minneapolis, as well as the mayor, and then there'll be other seats that are up for election, reelection, and et cetera. And we have a situation here that we certainly talked about in our newspaper column in the oldest black paper in the state of Minnesota, the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. The Viking Stadium, a $1 billion public works project, the largest in the history of the state of Minnesota, in which, by and large, African Americans are going to be denied opportunity to work the jobs, the meaningful jobs, on the quote-unquote people's statement and stadium. In fact, it was rather peculiar and very disingenuous to see Civil Rights Director Velma Corvell on TV Monday here in our city talking in terms of how startled and concerned she was about the disparity between black and white workers in this state. The only problem is those reports started coming out in 2009. In fact, there were two specific studies, one of which the city of Minneapolis paid $500,000 of your tax dollars, Minnesota's Minneapolis citizens, to do a six-year study. It took 6 years to get the information together that clearly indicated that. And then there, 6 months before, in April, there was a report that came out from the very prestigious National Economic Research Institute in Washington, which said the same thing, and then they issued another report in May of 2012, which indicated that nothing has improved. In fact, the disparity between black and white workers in this state is just absolutely criminal. It's outrageous. But anyways, in this article, Below the Fold, Wednesday's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, labor flexes its muscles in Minneapolis race. A union leader, a guy by the name of Dan McConnell, who is, he's got a lot of different positions of authority. He is the chair of the Minneapolis DFL. He's also a business manager of the Minneapolis Building and Construction Trade Council, which definitely does nothing for African-Americans or tries to get African-Americans into the construction trades. That's why a group of journeymen African-Americans out of Kansas City, Missouri, by the way, for those of you folks down there in that Kansas City area, these brothers have put it together and have laid out a proposal to bring over 100 African-American journeymen, if you will, not somebody that needs training or et cetera, here to work on the People's Stadium. But Dan McConnell, in this article, in Wednesday's edition, does and reveals the doggondest thing. And the reason that it's interesting, because a similar action by three separate Minneapolis City Council members in the last decade sent them to the penitentiary, if you will. First was Councilman Brian Herron, Democrat 8th Ward. Then it was Councilman Joe Biernet, Democrat 1st Ward. And then it was independent Green Party, but still kind of Democrat, Dean Zimmerman of the then 6th Ward, who all accepted money in envelopes after voting or using their office to bestow significant favors and votes. And we don't, you know, those kinds of exposés don't talk about the real big money, such as the money that was paid out to get Mortenson Construction the job here as the general construction manager of the billion dollar, my friends, People's Stadium that will be built and should supposedly will be completed in July of 2016. But anyways, in this article, Councilman Don Samuels, who is running for mayor, which means he can't defend his 5th Ward councilmatic seat, talked in terms of how he has just kind of fallen in love with the Democratic Party. And in an article which has drawn no response, no one has said anything. It's like everybody's saying mum is the word here in Minneapolis. Samuels talks about that right after he voted to support the mayor's violation of the Minneapolis City Charter and not put the question of the Viking Stadium being built in the city of Minneapolis, that he, Councilmember Samuels, DFL 5th Ward, received $2,000 in an envelope. Now, that may not be big money in places like, you know, Chicago or Detroit or Cleveland, St. Louis, you know, places like that, New York City, L.A., but, you know, it's a fairly nice piece of, you know, chump change here in the Twin Cities, and particularly in Minneapolis. And he says it right there in the article. In fact, I was surprised initially as a journalist that the editors at the Star Tribune allowed the writer, a young lady who actually had come here from Philadelphia about a year ago, named Maya Real, R-A-O, to actually use that quote, because, as we said before on this program, three councilmen in a span of about 8 years were involved in similar kind of practices. Brian Herron was for $10,000. Joel Biernet was for about $2,400, and Dean Zimmerman was for about $6,000. According to complaints filed by the federal government, as well as stories written by the major newspapers here in the Twin Cities. And so that $2,000 that Councilman Don Samuels indicated he received in an envelope when he went to a construction trade union dinner to, you know, show appreciation to the seven council members. See, it was a 7-6 vote 7 council members voted to support the mayor's violation of the city charter. The other 6 said no. Some of them are running for mayor. Some of them are just running away, if you know what I mean. But all 13 seats are up. And so I was kind of taken back because normally in my city, you know, folks are a little bit more clever than that, if you will. There's been not a lot said on the so-called social media, the blogs, the cyber, and all those kinds of things that people just love to get on and wax and rap that, et cetera. And so here we have an elected public official who says, yeah, you know, I voted to give the mayor the authority to put a $1 billion public works facility in our city. And also they also knew, I mean, let's be very candid here on this program, that they knew that Mortenson Construction of Minneapolis was going to be the ultimate entity selected to be the construction manager to handle over $753 million in construction monies, if you will. I mean, this was all a part of how the grand plan was working. I mean, this time last year here in these cities, there was just intense and rancorous back and forth between the council members that did not want to violate the city charter and those who ultimately voted to do that. But I never thought, I mean, I've been here a long, long, long time. I've watched city government. I have been an appointed city official, if you will, and I have conducted investigations, if you will. I've also served as a federal monitor for the Department of Justice and for the federal court. And I got to tell you, and I've watched 3 council members in an 8-year period go to jail, you know, for doing the same thing. And I'm just blown away in some respects that this happened and that nothing was in any shape, form, or fashion said in terms of concern, outrage, and the demand for inquiry about what the heck happened. Because you can believe if Councilmember Samuels got an envelope with $2,000 in it for his vote, you know what the other 6 people got. And Councilman Samuels is the only black member, quote-unquote, colored member on the Minneapolis City Council. So you got to understand that the other 6 white council members got a whole lot more in their envelope than Brother Man got, if you know what I'm saying. But story, you know, Wednesday's edition, this past Wednesday's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, March 20th edition. Labor, organized labor, talks in terms of how it flexed its muscles and opened its billfold and bought some votes, if you will. Heck of a thing. Also, for those that follow closely what goes on in our cities, and as we said before, phone number is now open, 763-228-1748, to take a look at, and if you have any questions, particularly on this buying of votes here in the city of Minneapolis on a major public works project, $1 billion, my friends. We're not talking about couple hundred thousand dollars, even a couple million. This was a $1 billion public works project, and big labor spread the money around. So, you know, you can talk about Chicago all you want. But the other story that has broken here a year ago, a little less than a year ago, a reporter by the name of Steve Brandt of the Minneapolis Star Tribune broke a story May of last year, if I'm not mistaken, talking about one of the educational greats, at least on paper here in our city, a gentleman by the name of Eric Mahmoud, who heads up a conglomeration, really, of schools, charter schools, and et cetera. And Mr. Brandt had apparently received some information a couple months before about felony convictions. And last year, Mr. Brandt wrote a story about Mr. Mahmoud pleading guilty to a felony charge in the state of Georgia, which he was not a resident of, but he had set up a quote-unquote business there. He and, 4 other individuals, 2 in Georgia, 1 in Cleveland, Ohio, and 2 here, including Mr. Mahmoud, pleaded guilty to a capital offense in the state of Georgia. with respect to fraud, house flipping, and et cetera, and particularly a $3 million fraud activity that it involved flipping some property. Well, anyways, he had to plead guilty. About the same month in 2010, when he finally pleaded guilty, Mr. Eric McMull, he was a named defendant in a case in the courts here, the state court here, where he was sued by Wells Fargo, the big, powerful Wells Fargo. He was sued, he and a man by the name of Tran. We still tell jokes about Tran here in Minneapolis. Tran was a ghost, if you will, but Tran was allegedly the purchaser of a piece of property in North Minneapolis along a boulevard called Golden Valley Road. And they pulled quite a scam and ripped, this is what the court documents say, they ripped Wells Fargo off for a nice chunk of money. But in the process, they destroyed a black business, a African-American daycare center, that was run by, what was it, four African-American biological sisters, if you will. In fact, one was a former police officer in the city who had decided to leave law enforcement and really get involved with working with the very young of our community, et cetera. Well, as an outgrowth of the fraud that was committed in that property there along Golden Valley Road, the daycare facility was forced out of business, and the four African-American women took a tremendous loss. Well, anyways, the court probably knew, did not know, but they were not concerned with that because the legal action that was being brought by Wells Fargo to get back, you know, the white folks' money. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And so the court found against Eric and this Tron, who's yet to be found. Now, there wasn't anything written about that until the principal owner at the time in 2010 came forward with information. And then last year, the principal owner of the business came forward and revealed to us as a journalist very incriminating documentation and evidence of significant fraud and et cetera that had been going on and that certainly led to not only the destruction of their business, these four African-American women who really basically lost everything, if you will. But Mr. Brand and the Star Tribune kept indicating there was even more. And so what happened over the last number of months, unbeknownst to quote-unquote black leaders in my city here, the Star Tribune and their quote-unquote ace reporter continued to pursue and gained access to the criminal transcript, criminal transcript of the events in Georgia starting way back in, as early as 2002, 2003. Well, lo and behold, on the website, and we assume that it will be in tomorrow's edition, Sunday edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Mr. Brandt writes and talks in terms of evidence from the criminal file, which indicates that, and I tell you, I was just absolutely shocked, particularly when you talk about the quotes in the article from high-ranking educational officials, Minneapolis Board of Education, which Mr. Eric McMull has significant contracts with, making a lot of money. State Department of Education, which has been trying to find every way imaginable not to investigate this fraud. But what the Star Tribune did today, and for those of you that are like, why is he making this up? Why is he doing this attack? It is an attack. It's facts. You know, at some point, you're going to have to face up to facts. You know what I'm saying? And so in the copyrighted story in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, they found a interesting witness who apparently gave, a lot of you got out there who are supporters of Mr. Eric McMull didn't know this, who gave testimony before a Georgia grand jury. And she was an administrative assistant. according to, and we're merely repeating what was in the Minneapolis Star Tribune story. She was an administrative assistant to Brother Eric Mahmoud, and she was involved operating from the Seed Academy, Best Academy, Synergy, and et cetera. He has, I think he has five different schools within one facility, so a lot of money's coming in. But she was the principal person, according to the story now, not anything that we're making up here on Point, if you will, and we'll be doing a little bit more on our own television program, Black Focus, next Sunday, if you will, that much of the collusion, if you will, the preparation for the fraud in the state of Georgia, in the tune of, you know, at least $3 million at minimum, was developed, if you will, nurtured, if you will, and carried out from the offices, the direct offices of Brother Eric Mahmoud. Now, what the story goes on to say here in our beloved Minneapolis, my version of Shangri-La, was that there were others involved, and we have reason to believe here on this particular program that Mr. Brandt actually has the names of some other high-ranking African-American leaders, if you will, who were meeting to develop, prior to 05, by the way, to develop the Georgia fraud, quote-unquote, felony violation. Now, I have a pretty good idea who it is, but I'm not going to, you know, take that step at this particular point. Want to kind of draw out some of the people that are, you know, such strong supporters of this kind of activity, because one of the things that has happened is that the African-American owner and her sisters of the business that was put out of business has been much attacked and maligned and et cetera by the supporters of Eric Mahmoud, some who are ministers, by the way, men of the cloth, if you will, others like board chairs, bankers themselves, investment bankers. I mean, you know, represent the quality of quote-unquote what goes on in our nation and in our communities, the kind of people that, you know, really should be in positions of leadership, according to those that manage and quote-unquote coordinate corruption in our communities. And so I was just taken back, really, my friends, when I saw and heard the story written by Mr. Brandt, that we now have documentation in the files of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, GBI, and the state of Georgia, which, of course, GBI is a part of, as well as the grand jury testimony, the criminal indictments, and the transcripts, and et cetera, which clearly indicate that much of the development of this significant fraud, felony, if you will, was quote-unquote nurtured, as we said before, right here. You know, in fact, it was being done as little children were going up and down the halls, expecting their parents, expecting that they were being nurtured, if you will, and educated, not trained like SEALs or et cetera, but being educated in the importance of values, if you will, and the importance of integrity, honesty, transparency, and et cetera. And I just wonder how many of those babies may in some way or another been affected by the criminality and the RICO kind of racketeering that was going on, as those babies, those children, and their mothers and fathers were paying a pretty nice, you know, piece of money for tuition, and the federal government was giving money. I just kind of wondered how the U.S. Attorney's Office felt back in 2010 when Wells Fargo demanded their money, you know, from Eric and from Mr. Tran, whoever Mr. Tran is. I wonder how the government, who already knew this, the federal authorities, because they represented one of the defendants, which it's really an interesting scenario, because one of the defendants, along with Mr. Tran and Mr. Mahmoud, was the Internal Revenue Service. But I think I have a pretty good idea of what that angle was. So that meant the U.S. Attorney's Office was fully aware of the criminal indictments, the testimony, those who had become whistleblowers, and et cetera. In fact, in the article by Mr. Brandt, it was interesting that the woman who is now identified as the administrative assistant who was involved in helping to falsify documents, statements, if you will, to defraud Georgia banks and other banks around the United States. She obviously has talked to her attorney because she says a very clever thing in the article in, you know, the edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and that was she couldn't remember if she had, you know, developed, nurtured, created these documents. But if she did, she did because she was ordered to do so, and what could she do? She was just merely an employee, you know, just carrying out her task and job description. I'm quite sure job description didn't say that she was to participate in significant criminal fraud and felony. So you know what I mean? But clearly, she had talked to her attorneys, you know, definitely before she gave testimony before a Georgia grand jury. Way back, my friends, way back in 2005 when Eric Makbu and others were charged with criminal conspiracy, racketeering, blah, 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 blah. So anyways, that's an issue. Now let me make a prediction for our listening audience outside of Minnesota. You can believe there will not be a whimper, if you will, of expression of concern on the two issues that we've just talked to you about. The issue dealing with Councilman Don Samuels and the envelope that he received in exchange for his vote on the People's Stadium and violating the Minneapolis City Charter, and you will definitely not hear anything about additional revealing investigative information by the Star Tribune that talks in terms of a criminal conspiracy, criminal collusion, a criminal whatever you want to call it, actually emanating inside of a center of learning. You know, the only thing that's worse than that is if it were the contrivance took place inside of an ecumenical center. Oops. But then the word is out that some ministers in our beloved city were involved in these scams, these house flippings, these causing people to lose everything that they had, including, as we said, in closing, four African-American women, sisters who went into business trying to do the right thing and basically lost $1 million a year business. I mean, you know, they had a tremendous business going, were very popular, very well respected, never cited for violations and et cetera, yet were treated like dogs, if you will. As here's what happened in closing on that. They were paying rent on the building after allegedly it was transferred and sold to Mr. Tran, though the court records later showed that that was a false transaction, that was bogus, that was fraud. And yet the mortgage was never being honored, was never dealt with, and so consequently they found the daycare facility found themselves out in the street. Yet they, and boy, I'm telling you, it was interesting. Last year, we clearly, as a journalist, heard specifically how these former owners, these African-American women, longtime members, born, some of them born right here in our beloved city, how they produced check stubs that showed that they met their obligation each and every month for over 3 years. But folks, my leaders in this city basically said, well, so what? I mean, you know, sometimes you have to destroy the people to save the village, and Eric is too important in whatever the equation is that our leaders, quote-unquote, buy into. And so in that four African-American women lost their business, and lost significant amounts of money, had to defer the education of their own children, et cetera, that, you know, that's okay because, you know, old boy's a homie. He want us, you know what I mean? Whatever that is supposed to mean. But, hey, that's how things are operating at this very hour in our beloved city. Say, by the way, a lot of violence downtown Minneapolis last night. We were going to touch a little bit on the police situation. But before we do that, we were talking to some of our media associates in California. We were critical of the fact that we thought nothing was happening in California as an outgrowth of the manifesto and the significant revelations brought forward by the late police officer and the Navy Lieutenant Christopher Dorn. But lo and behold, we find out that first of all, a former crime investigative reporter for over 20-some years, Caroline Lowe of WCCO, who relocated to California, San Luis Obispo, if I'm not mistaken, and a reporter for, I think it's KNBC in L.A., have brought forward some real damaging investigative reporting against the Los Angeles Police Department and against the court system there in Los Angeles County and et cetera, because of the cover-up in order to protect the thin blue line that ultimately led to that just series of absolute tragedies. No one, of course, condones or signs off on the actions of Christopher and the taking of lives, but then on the other hand, if the system would have carried out its responsibility in a responsible manner, none of this tragedy would have probably taken place. But hey, what the heck? I mean, that's the way things seem to work. By the way, for those of you out there, have you noticed the increase in multiple shootings and et cetera all across the country? You know, guy gets so mad up in Colorado, he plays a smooth enough that he gets paroled and immediately assigns himself the responsibility of assassinating the commissioner of corrections for the state of Colorado. Went to his house there just outside of Colorado Springs, blew him away. You know, apparently he died in a massive gun battle somewhere in North Texas yesterday. They're trying to get a handle on how the heck this happened. And then in the meanwhile, we have three Marines shot and killed on Marine base there in Virginia, if you will. We've had a couple more shootings. And then, as I said, last night in downtown Minneapolis, we had a hostage situation. People, at least a couple people apparently shot, if you will. This comes at a bad time for our police department here because just about 2 weeks ago, they had a hostage situation in North Minneapolis. The brother outweighed him. You know, I've never heard, for those of you that are in law enforcement that listen to these programs, I've never heard of a situation in which a major police department like Minneapolis gets in a hostage state of siege situation and the perpetrator is able to hang on to the extent that the Minneapolis Police Department exhausted all of its tear gas. And finally, the brother just indicated that he was ready to come out because he had run out of ammunition. Now, there was a fierce gun battle up there. There was basically nothing in the papers here in the city of Minneapolis about that entire action that happened along, you know, Laurie in North Minneapolis. But last night, you had the hostage situation, and I guess a lot of people don't know that in the last 6 or 7 days after the fiasco in North Minneapolis where, oh, by the way, in that gun battle, snipers, now these are snipers for the Minneapolis Police Department, supposed to be well-trained and et cetera, actually messed up and fired shots into somebody else's house, if you will, and the person just narrowly escaped, you know, injury, you know. Paper didn't report that either. You know, it's just kind of things we didn't want to talk about. But what happened was our SWAT team has been disbanded. You know, the 30 officers that had been involved with our SWAT team here in Minneapolis, been enjoying kind of the life of Riley because the word has always been in the Minneapolis Police Department that you want to be a member of the SWAT team or one of the so-called elite teams because it's nothing but kick back, put your feet up, and relax, if you will. Well, the unit got disbanded by Chief Janae Harto in just the last 6 or 7 days after, quote-unquote, a very poor performance as it pertains to the big gun battle in North Minneapolis almost 2 weeks ago. So some of that came into play last night in a high-rise gunman holding up on, I guess it was the fifth floor of the building. Can't even get the information correct. apparently a couple people shot, if you will. Gunman found dead, allegedly a self-inflicted gunshot wound, if you will. Though there was nothing in this morning's paper because, it happened early enough that the Star Tribune, when they choose to, could have put something in the paper, but they chose not to. I guess they couldn't get all the facts correct about the victim, if you will. Like I said, this comes at a bad time. By the way, for those of you listening in from North Minneapolis, particularly who have young sons and etc., the new Violent Offenders Task Force, if you will, VOTOC, is on the move now out of the Sheriff's Department. And in fact, Sergeant Pat King, you have to be a black police officer here in Minneapolis to recognize his name. He's Caucasian. But he was involved about, 6 years ago in the absolute destruction by making false allegations against black police officers, the absolute destruction of the Black Police Officers Association, which just disappeared, if you will, after Pat King, Andy Smith, Grant Schneider, O'Rourke, and others put together a heck of a scenario. In fact, actually, one black police officer went to federal penitentiary for a year, not having anything really to do with his corruption, but unfortunately he was snitched out. Now get this, he was snitched out by two police officers that he was working for as a part of a security contract with a spaghetti place downtown there, Pizza Lucci's there, what it's called. And it was a husband-wife operation. And what they did, they went in and got certain books, if you will, that showed cash payouts to police officers, just concentrated on this black officer, gave it to the feds and IRS, and when the case against him for violation of public integrity seemed to be kind of weak, the feds came after this black officer for income tax evasion, and he plea bargained and served a year in the federal penitentiary. Well, anyways, these officers led by our very good friend, Pat King, led the charge. And last May, again, how things operate in our town, you didn't get a blow-by-blow description from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who had a reporter in the courtroom, maybe 11 of the 14 days, but in that trial, which actually cost them their case, the two officers, Officer King and Officer Smith, two Caucasian officers, they probably cost themselves a affirmative decision and verdict, quote-unquote, by the judge. It was heard without jury. As they talked about black officers like they had tails, they identified about seven black officers under oath, called them, referred to them as the scum of the earth, if you will, and said that officers like Lieutenant Lee Edwards, no relation, by the way, and Sergeant Charles Adams, his brother, Patrol Officer Tony Adams, a couple of black lieutenants, and et cetera, should have been put in the federal penitentiary for the rest of their lives, and et cetera. Well, anyways, these two white officers, King and Smith, lost their case. I mean, it shocked everybody. In late November, the judge came back and said no. So anyways, King and Smith have transferred to the sheriff's office. And so my warning to those of you out there in North Minneapolis that have, you know, particularly young sons, the VOTOC unit is now on the move. And, man, they have been rousting you brothers and to some degree you sisters out there in North Minneapolis as the sheriff's VOTOC unit is moving about. And let me tell you, I mean, this is what this program is all about, is to bring you the kind of information that you need to have. The department, some say the sheriff's department is really being ran by someone other than the sheriff, and I've known the sheriff for many years, and I know that he wouldn't knowingly allow that to happen. But what happened was, after Sergeant Pat King, and they say that just the other day he officially, for those of you that talk back with the police or you go back and you know, listen to this on demand. Pat comes in one day to the offices of his new job as a sergeant in the sheriff's VOTAC unit, and he's telling his other fellow white sheriff's deputies, I mean, he's now a sheriff's deputy, about they needed to get up off their butt and get out in the street and harass the Negroes and do what needed to be done. And one of the white officers, or in this case, sheriff's deputies, told him to stick it, you know what I mean? And, boy, that was a mistake, wasn't it, fellas? Because the next day, this officer who had, you know, made the mistake of standing up to Pat, if you will, was transferred out. Sent him out there, way out there to Deep Haven somewhere, you know, as far into the county, where ain't nothing out there but deer and squirrels and pine trees, if you will. And so the word is out that Pat is the man. Andy has transferred over to the sheriff's department at the rank of lieutenant. I mean, I know many of you know this, but see, our community needs to know it, because that's the reason for all these increased stops in North Minneapolis, is, you know, young African Americans are being pulled out of the car, guns put to their heads, and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera. And here's what's happened, is that Minneapolis police officers working in the north side are kind of really ticked off, because that's really kind of the invasion, if you will, of their territorial integrity and, you know, obligations and et cetera. But you see, if you know the law, there's nothing you can do, because the sheriff is the highest ranking law enforcement officer by county, if you will. And so the sheriff's office and the sheriff's department actually, you know, has authority over anything that operates anywhere, be it a small municipality or a big city like Minneapolis. And so what's happened is that Pat and Andy have said not only are they going to take over, but just a word to our black police officers, there's only about 66 on a 1,000-man force here in Minneapolis, but our black police officers need to know that the discussion has gone in this direction. The discussion says we're going to right the ship, if you will, and we're going to get these black officers. They refer to them by the NIG word. I mean, you know, we try to stay away from using that word on a, you know, broadcast of this particular nature. But they have said that they intend to set you black officers up again, as they did in 2005, 2006. In fact, got to tell you, believe that some illegal wiretaps are already in play for some of you black officers out there. These are black Minneapolis police officers. You are the targets of the new Hennepin County Sheriff's VOTOC unit. And in fact, they're working with some quote-unquote known CCIs, those are certified confidential informants, to try to set some of you black officers up by making statements about the fact that, just as they did back in the day when they used the legendary Balachi, that you black officers are involved with drugs and murder and et cetera. Now, for those of you outside of the Twin Cities, outside the state of Minnesota, outside the United States, everything that we're saying to you is a repeat. It is a mirror. It is a shadow of what happened in these cities in 2004 and 5, as the Black Police Officers Association was being absolutely destroyed, if you will. It's a non-functional body, you know. Black officers just kind of hanging around, you know, and hanging on. And it's really sad, because at one point in time, prior to a situation involving another black officer who really got it stuck to her, this Black Police Officers Association was a very effective group, doing a lot of things, working closely with community in increasing the numbers of African Americans in the Minneapolis Police Department. As we said, and that's not a misrepresentation, we have a 1,000-man department, or 1,000-officer department, and we really only have about 66 black officers in this department, if you will. And that number has been pretty stagnant since the conditions imposed on the city of Minneapolis by the Department of Justice in 2004 was lifted in 2008, which, you know, it was supposed to be a, you know, 5-year run or whatever. But anyways, this is some of the information here as we go into basically the last 13 minutes. As we said before, there is a phone line. If you have any questions, if you will, as I said before, co-host Don Allen at a conservative convention basically figured he wasn't going to be able to make it. But line is open, 763-228-1748. 763-228-1748. We've been talking about a multiplicity of things as it pertains. We started out by talking about the international scene, possibility of chemical warfare in the Middle East. It looks like a premature condemnation by the president and Western governments, if you will. Then we kind of moved into some of the corruption and criminal activity going on here in our beloved Shangri-La. That's a nickname that I gave this enclave many, many years ago, because folks walk around like, you know, it's Shangri-La, Camelot, you know what I mean? By the way, on the Viking Stadium situation, negotiations are going on between the gentlemen of the round table in Kansas City, Missouri. We mentioned that earlier in this program. They have 100 African-American, black, if you will, artisans, journeymen, and et cetera, ready to come in and fill the positions in which, unfortunately, there are no African-Americans who have been trained and are certified and credentialized to work some of the best-paying jobs on the People's Stadium, if you will. I'm even talking in terms of crane operators, you know, those big cranes that you see out there lifting all that heavy material and et cetera. They have a couple of certified, experienced crane operators. They have individuals operating in every other specific discipline, if you will. Now, this is creating a problem, isn't it? This is for my leaders out there in the hintlands, because some of you have already been talking about putting your little businesses together and getting, quote-unquote, a contract with a white subcontractor, and then helping them to put these bogus figures into the reports, if you will. By the way, the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department has selected a contract compliance overseer who will allegedly monitor the stadium. Construction really will not begin until April, March of next year. Really running behind on this stadium. The design plans were supposed to come in this past week. We won't be coming in until April, creating some real problems, if you will. The city and the state, by the way, have not been able to meet their obligations of about $25 million each to put in the construction fund that has to be in place prior to the first shovel of dirt, which would technically start in October of this year. There must be a $100 million construction fund. That's by legislative mandate right there in the legislation. Unfortunately, Vikings put their $50 million down in June of last year. City and the state was to put in $348 million. City of Minneapolis, $150 million, and, of course, the Vikings and the NFL put in about $377 million, if you will, taking it to around the $953 mark. But then there are additional costs, which will bring it to a little over $1 billion, if you will. Well, for those of you listening out there, City of Minneapolis hasn't been able to come up with its $25 million. State is having all kinds of problems because they were going to do it with electronic pull tabs and et cetera. Now they're talking about electronic bingo. People just don't have an interest, you know, to continue to support that. They maintain that the Viking owner should be able to pay for it by himself. That's not possible, if you will. By the way, the NFL did sign off a couple of days ago while enjoying the sunshine in Phoenix at the NFL owners' meeting, quote-unquote. The NFL approved a loan of $200 million to our and here we have a quick call. Let us see this. Yes, can we help you? Go right ahead, sir, because we're holding you up to the phone because we don't have the technical equipment. Our co-host is not here. Why don't you enunciate your question so our listening audience can hear it, and I'll try to respond. The caller who is calling from outside, this appears to be calling outside of, this may be our friend from Chattanooga, Tennessee. He asked a question about the equity program. Actually, it's not a department, sir. It's an equity program that was created by Velma Corvell to prepare for the misrepresentation of the numbers. She hired a woman about 10 months ago. The woman happens to be the sister of Wanda Kirkpatrick, the affirmative action or diversity director for the Met Council, who also on state time did the equity plan for the sports facility. So it's Wanda's sister who is the coordinator for the so-called equity plan. Does that help you out? What Ms. Corvell was at a meeting yesterday morning at 7:30 yesterday morning on 46 in Chicago at a bakery there, in which she was telling the fairy tales. She has indicated, in fact, she did an interview with KSTP, sir, because you're not here in Minnesota. She did an interview Monday with KSTP, and she indicated that she was had become aware of the disparity, the significant gulf between black and white workers in this state. I was puzzled by that because her bosses paid, $500,000 for the study, and I was in the council chambers in October of 2010 when she, quote-unquote, responded to a series of, very shallow questions by the council about the report, which just blasted the city of Minneapolis and the disparity. But anyway, she said, 3 years later, she's going to put something together. And of course, she said the same thing when they built the Minneapolis Public Schools headquarters here in the city of Minneapolis on West Broadway, right in the midst of all of that poverty and et cetera, black folk not working. She sat on the equity committee then and didn't do anything. Yeah. What we basically can expect from Ms. Corvell is that she'll get an envelope, like we talked earlier on this program about, our council members. She'll get an envelope, and there'll be a nice package in there for her, and nothing will happen. Any other questions, sir? We're beginning to run out of time.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Martin, I believe he's scot-free. Well, Mr. Frank writing another article about
him. Well, Eric Mahmoud is, he has his certain defenders out there, and I'm quite sure they'll be rushing to defend him. He's still on probation, from his offense and arrest in Georgia in 2005. When you ask the question, why is the Star Tribune writing the story, I think, sir, we have to indicate, and you're down there close to that Georgia situation, being apparently you're calling us from Chattanooga, Tennessee. It appears that the Star Tribune, after examining the transcripts and testimony before grand jury and et cetera, has determined that they are now in a position to name other key principals who were involved in the extortion. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you, sir.
All right, thank you, sir. Caller out of apparently Chattanooga, Tennessee, asking a couple questions. Well, we've got to wrap it up. My God, we're right here on top of the hour, if you will. Appreciate you giving us the time to come in to your home via the computers and et cetera, if you will. We know there will probably be a lot of on-demand requests for this particular program. But anyways, we appreciate the opportunity. to bring as much information as we possibly can, and hopefully my co-host, Mr. Don Allen, will be back with us and with me next week. But we appreciate you listening in and taking time to listen to our reflections. Again, I'm co-host Ron Edwards. This is On Point Black Political. We've got so many different names, and we'll be back with you next week. Take care, and God bless Black America.